everyone, and welcome to another Bond Buyer podcast. I'm Lynn Funk, Innovation Editor at the Bond Buyer, and today I have with me Anand Kesavan, Chief Executive Officer of Equitable Facilities Fund. Prior to the fund, Anand led the Structured Finance Group and ran the Facility Fund for the Charter School Growth Fund, where he helped identify the nation's best schools and invest in them. Prior to that, he served as Chief Financial Officer of Kip Austin Public Schools in Texas. And prior to Kip, Anand spent more than a decade in senior investment banking roles, financing more than $10 billion in public projects, including state revolving funds and K-12 schools, with a specialty in credit ratings and quantitative structuring. So, Anand, you know a bit about charter schools, huh? Why don't you tell me and our listeners a bit about the progress and challenges you have faced since you rolled the fund, and a little background on what it is you want to accomplish with it, and why, of course, you started it.
Thank you, Lynn. And thanks to the Bond Buyer for hosting us today. It's been one of the most incredible journeys of my life is starting the Equitable Facilities Fund. And social entrepreneurship is one of the most rewarding opportunities I've experienced. And the main reason is that we get to work in servant leadership for our schools, our charter schools, many of which make up some of the best schools, public schools in the country, serving some of the best students and some of the communities that really need schools. So it's an honor to be able to serve in a position that helps these schools. But this opportunity to do all this through social entrepreneurship doesn't come without some challenges. And those have been exciting too. I think the foremost of it is the challenge of bringing people together who often are from different communities, different professions, and have overlapping but different goals. And for me, this came kind of naturally because it's the three professions that were in my background. First was bringing investors in, specifically tax exempt muni bond investors into this specific revolving fund world. Two was bringing philanthropists into it to show how philanthropic funding could really drive social impact. And third, bringing charter schools into that room. So we're this perfect triangle combination of what's best for investors, what's best for philanthropic funders, and what's best for charter schools. And bringing those communities together is a challenge since they operate in different ways. Second is innovation. Anytime you're trying to do something new, especially in a market that has been around so long, the tax exempt muni market, it can be a challenge, but also a great opportunity. We had to work from scratch to put together a ratings philosophy with which we've been awarded a rating from S&P, and put together what's essentially a state revolving fund model from scratch, driven with a private donation. That innovation is always a challenge, and it's also one of the great opportunities in our sector. And lastly, it's measuring social impact. Right. In addition to investing in the nation's best charter schools, we also measure ourselves on the strength of the impact, not just the credit worthiness and the financial worthiness, but also how great of work are we and our schools doing for society. It's needed even more so in today's increasingly complex world of social inequalities, racial inequalities. And is measuring, are we making the world a better place? If so, by how much? And that's been something we will continue to work on, is measuring that social impact. So again, bringing communities together, two, innovation, and three, measuring social impact. Those have been the challenges that'll continue in our sector.
Okay, great. I have several questions that I want you to go into those areas a little bit more in as we continue the discussion. But I think I want to start, though, with COVID. How has it affected your business in both the day-to-day operations, with getting deals done in a volatile market? How is that working for you guys?
Yeah, thanks. It's been obviously in the forefront of our minds this year. The biggest thing is what's right in front of us is people. You know, we're very much a people relationship business. As I said, we're bringing these, you know, three communities together, and there's just less in-person interaction. You know, we don't get to see our teammates as much, and you know, putting people together is how innovation happens. We don't get to see our schools as much. And, you know, we invest in people as much as anything else, and spending time with the entrepreneurs, the leaders, the board members, the community that makes up our schools is a crucial part of what we do. And we don't get to see our funders and investors in person as much. So that whole thing about in-person relationships is certainly a challenge in our world, as it is for many sectors. And I think we've done a good job of dealing with that. You know, a combination of very active phone calls, of video chatting, of really being in touch early and often is a way that the whole sector has dealt with it. But our schools have really shown a lot of grit and perseverance in dealing with that. Because if not being in person is hard for us, it's 10 times harder for our schools, for our parents, for our children, for our teachers. And I'm at awe in how well some of our schools have dealt with that. That's been the biggest challenge. But the second one is certainly what all investors are feeling, is being able to value the risk of increased economic uncertainty. You know, at the local level, at the state level, you know, even at the national level, but certainly at our schools and the communities they serve. That's going to be a continued challenge. But again, I think that's what makes great investors who they are, is being able to value that. I do think that it those challenges also create some opportunities for our sector. You know, first, I think there's this opportunity of increased awareness around social inequalities and the fact that we all need to step up and play our role in helping solve those, whether it's health inequalities, income, racial, financial access. You know, a crisis can help highlight how important all doing our part is to do good for the world. I think we want to make sure to highlight how great our schools are doing and hopefully attract more time, more capital, and just more awareness in general around social bonds, social impact investing, and philanthropy. And I think there's an opportunity for our fund specifically, given that risk becomes a bit harder to quantify. Yeah, I think the value of a diverse fund that has strong relationships with schools to due diligence and has a hefty credit enhancement on it is, you know, in a time of uncertainty, is even more valuable to investors. And that's what we've been hearing from investors today.
So you have been hearing that, yes, investors, you know, how should they view school credits, especially charter school credits and a credit enhanced revolving fund such as Equitable SRF? I mean, our investors, how are they receiving your deals? You know, rates are in historic lows in the muni space. So how do you draw in those investors?
Yeah, it's a good timing for that question, as we've had, you know dozens of investor calls lately. You know, we've seen probably about as much demand as we've ever seen. Last year, our deal was 11 times oversubscribed in our first deal. And we're expecting perhaps less demand this year with COVID and credit spreads. We've actually seen quite the opposite. I think a combination of two things. One, the combination of the strength of our underlying schools, the essential service they're providing to the community, how long our schools have been around, regardless of COVID, regardless of a potential short-term blip in state revenues. You know, our schools are public schools. Our children aren't going anywhere. They're going to need these schools, especially schools who perform well. And the underlying credits themselves are an asset class that I think investors are continuing to be very interested in. And second, the value of that enhancement that we provide, layered on top of all those underlying strong schools, the enhancement both in financial terms, the fact that, you know, 46% of our schools could simply not pay, and after recoveries and you can still make bond payments, it seems to be even more valuable this year than last year. And our direct strong relationships with the underlying schools and the diligence value that provides in a time of uncertainty seems to be even more valuable. So that combination of really strong underlying credits and a credit enhancement on top of that seems to be a very attractive long-term investment for our investors.
You know, we're talking about investors, but what about, you know, philanthropic funders and social impact investors? You know, what makes this product that you are selling appealing to them?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Lynn. This is a new, exciting, and burgeoning market. As I said before, this increased awareness over the last handful of years in kind of doing well and doing good at the same time, I think is really going to drive social impact investing over the next several decades. And you know, the philanthropic markets have been around a long time and have been very successful. And I think this is investing in renewable funds, a fund that actually recycles, renews, and lasts forever while it creates value, is going to be the future of philanthropy, in addition to giving the money away. So let me talk about why I think the renewable philanthropy and the social impact markets are going to be so big. First, this is an opportunity to create what we call a high philanthropic return on investment. So think about it this way. Think about donating a dollar to a fund. It's a tax-deductible donation to a fund. And that fund puts money to work through impact investments. In the process, saves schools that are serving predominantly low-income children, saves that school a dollar. Right? So you donate a dollar, the fund then saves the school a dollar, and at the end, that dollar has been saved to school, and it's available to either be given back to the original investor or to be recycled again, right? And if you put that side by side with simply giving that dollar away, and it's a much higher return on investment if it can actually be executed. And that's what's really unique about a revolving philanthropic fund, that it lasts in perpetuity. And as that money is been put to work in the community, it creates both a social return and a kind of retained philanthropic return as well. So the money recycles. That's what's really unique. I think secondarily, or in addition to that, the investments made are being screened very heavily for high social impact. So that's you know, schools that serve a historically underserved community, schools that serve a racially diverse community, schools that serve a community that historically may not have had as much financial access, and schools that are running really terrific academic schools where their children are graduating from high school and college at rates well beyond opportunities that they had elsewhere. So the combination of a high philanthropic return on investment, first. Second, that it's scalable and recyclable. But the money does that, the donation is put to work in perpetuity, right? And third, that the actual underlying schools are very high impact to society. There's not a lot of great opportunities out there for philanthropy money that actually solve all three of those together. And we think that in the future, our fund and many others, hopefully like us, we'll be out there to attract the next generation of social impact funders and philanthropy.
So kind of that dovetails really nicely. So speaking of, you know, social bonds, I know you've got a recent designation from Kestrel Verifiers. Can you talk a little bit more broadly about social bonds and where you see them headed? Is that going to become something in the municipal industry specifically that, you know, you've got international investors, you have a younger generation of people who are keen to invest in something that has this impact in communities, perhaps now more than ever due to the health crisis?
Yeah, we are very excited about this social bond designation. We're excited about the, not just for us, but for the future of how folks are going to look at bond investing. And I think that you hit the nail on the head by starting with the demographic shift. The demographic shift of wealth moving into the hands of folks who are born after 1980. Over the next, two decades, more and more wealth is going to be in the hands of that generation. And it's clear through all the investment research that this new generation has a very high interest in social causes. And we think that it's going to continue to grow. So what happens when you have a whole generation that has a continued interest in social causes and has more wealth, and likely also wants to preserve that wealth, is this a still nascent industry of social bonds? Right now, perhaps it's more of a concept than it is a reality, but I do think in the next decade this is going to be a big opportunity for us, for several investment funds and for retail investors in general who want to do good and do well, keep building wealth, but put their money to work in meaningful causes. Now that demand from investors is going to create the need for funds like ours to put money to work to create a return and create a social good. So I think it's going to be a virtuous cycle of increasing demand from the next generation of wealth holders combined with increasing supply of funds like us who are really dedicated to put the money to work in communities, but have a dual lens, right? We have a dual lens of very strong credit underwriting and a very strong financial model, like any fund would, but layered on with a primary lens of social impact. I do think that in the future, and maybe this is another generation or two down, we'll just stop calling these social impact bonds, and we'll just be calling them bonds, because the next generation is going to demand that all of these investments are socially good.
That's such an interesting point, because so many people I talk to in the industry have said, from the issuers to the bankers to the underwriters, like the municipal bond industry, municipal investment is the original impact investment. It is the original social. And it's going to take strong political will, in my opinion, to continue to make sure that continues and tell the story, right? Really explain to investors, this market is very misunderstood and it's unknown to a lot of folks. And I will say that I think that I've seen such an influx of international interest in this market and because of the impact. So what do you have anything to say about that?
I think that the muni bond market, the tax exempt bond market, the nonprofit bond market, we've seen foundations issuing bonds lately. The concept of putting high credit, moderate yield capital to work for the social good, I think is really a big part of our future. I think that's going to be one thing you're going to see grow. I think that you'll see more innovations in this marketplace, ideally creating more transparency and liquidity, so that folks can really measure the risk return and the social impact more transparently when they're making investment decisions. And I think, thirdly, hopefully with the help of technology looking forward, you'll see, more direct retail participation, in people's communities, in projects that we know. We drive over a bridge every day. Let's invest in the bridge we drive over. We there's a school building down the street. I want to go to that ribbon cutting, and I also want to, invest, $10,000 in a mini bond, in my retirement portfolio. I think we're going to see more of that. So the combination of more social investing, more transparency, and better technology, we're hoping that we can start to start to, you know, have the, you know, parents of children who attend our schools, or board members of our schools, community members in the city where we're building schools hold our bonds. And we think that's a, you know, that's a long-term future. But all of that with a social impact lens, without sacrificing the financials and credit that we've always demanded in the bond market.
Okay, that's, yes, you know, Anand, I think that is, I think a lot of people, you're not just the only one saying that. And I, you know, I talk to a lot of people in the industry, and it's becoming a chorus of this outlook. So I guess with that, I want to ask you, what, with COVID, with everything that's going on, with low rates, with, you know, the election coming up, what would you say that the market in general, the industry, should be on the lookout for the remainder of 2020 and beyond, the future of munis, of philanthropy, social impact, innovations? Like, is there any particulars you could share with us?
Yeah, I think in the near term, from a credit lens, in the near term, we all have to be focused on local and state economies rebounding and how fast they rebound. You know, this is the heart of what funds schools for us. So before we're jumping forward on anything else, we have a very clear view on how states and localities are going to recover. You know, so far we feel cautiously optimistic about that. That's more of a near term thing. Moving forward, I do think that there's a big opportunity for the investor community to step up on innovations around social impact. Everyone this year has been talking about, well, what can we do to help with COVID? What can we do to help with social inequalities, which have been highlighted? And what can we do to help with racial inequalities that have been highlighted this year? I think that the muni bond market, the investors involved, the banks involved, the intermediaries like us involved. I think we all need to think about how do we really team up together to make, you know, social impact bonds less of a buzzword and more of a really strong in investor product. I think that sooner or later, that's going to, you know, separate the investment funds that do really well. With the next generation investors, we're going to demand that. I think there's, you know, it's been heartening to see a lot of funds and banks make progress on that. So I think that's what I'm most excited about after this COVID recovery.
Anand, this has been a really great conversation, and I think, you know, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts. You know, I agree with you on many of your points that this is I think the municipal market in particular needs to be the leaders. You know, there are a lot of people in this industry who are leading, but we need to be the leaders to bring specifically the United States out of this crisis. And it's a daunting task, but I think we've got a lot of folks in the industry who are up for the task. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we go?
No, this is fantastic. I completely agree with you. Listen, muni bond investors built a good portion of this country in the last 100 years. I think that the next 100 years, that's going to continue. So I think I'm really bullish on the industry, and I think we can do a lot of great things for the world.
Well, right on that. Anand, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to continuing the discussion with you and others, and thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
This episode of the Bond Buyer Podcast was executive produced by David Evans, with audio production by Kelly Malone. Thank you to my guests today, and thank you all for listening.